tell the people what you're here for.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
The first
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
CHOY 105.5. You're listening to Radio Basics. We're bringing you another show tonight. 8 to 9 o'clock, coming at you every week. We are the radio wing of Basics Free Community Newsletter. And we got a new home online, basicsnews.ca. Check it out. We got a really important show today. I know a lot of people have heard a lot about Haiti over the last week, but what people haven't heard is the social situation in Haiti, or at least that's not what we've been hearing a lot about in the mainstream media. What's been capturing headlines is the aspects of the natural disaster and the situation that has arisen therefrom. But what the mainstream media is not covering is putting the natural calamity in Haiti into its appropriate social and historical context. And I'm not talking about going back 200 years to the liberation of Haiti by the slave revolution of 1804. I'm talking about, let's take it just as far back as 2004, where Canada, United States, and France militarily intervened, invaded the country, and kidnapped the very popular, democratically elected Jean-Bertrand Aristide, February 29th, 2004. Since then, Haiti has been in a situation of social disaster, social catastrophe, arising from the recolonization and occupation of Haiti. And it's that context that we must keep in mind when assessing the natural disaster that struck Haiti earlier last week. Tonight on the show, we're going to be interviewing, we've actually done an interview with investigative journalist from Haiti, but currently based right now out of Oakland, Kevin Pina. He's been serving in Haiti for decades. He has his family there, and he's bringing us some much-needed information from on the ground in Haiti in terms of the militarization of the aid and the intervention into Haiti to respond to this natural disaster. And later in the show, we're going to be interviewing Toronto activist B.C. Holmes from the Toronto Haiti Action Committee. Toronto Haiti Action Committee, or THAAC, has been doing a lot of work since 2004, 2005, to expose to Canadians the nature of Canada's intervention in Haiti since 2004, when Canada, again, along with France and the United States, militarily intervened, invaded, and destroyed the social infrastructure that had been built up by the popular movement in Haiti. Before we get to all that, we're going to hit you up with a track. This track is from a Haitian folk singer by the name of, her popular name is Soanne, Sister Anne, in Haitian Creole, and her name is Annette Auguste. Very important Haitian singer in from Haiti. Her life story is that she fled Haiti in the 1970s to the United States, to Brooklyn, fleeing the U.S.-backed dictator Baby Doc Duvalier, and she returned to Haiti later to join the popular movement, the upsurge of popular forces, who, in the wake of the overthrow of the dictatorship in Haiti, the Baby Doc Duvalier dictatorship, a flurry of popular initiative and mass organization gave rise, which the West imperialism has been trying to repress ever since. And this is the context we're going to be discussing today. But without further ado, this is a track by Soanne. Actually, not without further ado. I feel like I got to speak a little bit more on this woman's incredible and courageous life. In 2004, after the invasion of Haiti by Canada, U.S., and France, a couple months later, she was at gunpoint kidnapped by U.S. Marines when they broke into her home, killed all of her animals, her dogs who were living with her, and took her arrest into custody. They held her in jail without a trial for 2 years on no charges. Just the apparently the allegation that she posed some kind of threat, and indeed she did to the U.S. occupation. The threat that she posed was that she was a popular folk star in Haiti, and she supported the popular movement, which was overthrown by the imperialism's occupation of that country. So let's get to that track. This is Résistance from Soane.
Escuchando CHRY 105.5, tu estación de radio comunitaria. Escucha en vivo en nuestro sitio web www.chry.fm.
CHOY 105.5, this is Radio Basics. I'm Steve DeSilva, and we're back tonight. The topic of our discussion today is the social, that is, social disaster in Haiti. The natural disaster that struck on January 12th, last week, 2010, must be understood in its proper context of the social disaster that is and has been Haiti for the last 6 years, in fact, for the last 200 years. And this is a disaster that is a result of colonialism and imperialism. As many may already know, or if you don't, Haiti was the second independent republic of the Western Hemisphere. It was the first modern black republic. It was the first successful slave revolution in human history to lead to the establishment of a stable republic. And it was tremendously important in completely reconfiguring international relations in its own day because of the tremendous impact that the Haitian Revolution had on world politics in 1804 by smashing the colonial army of Napoleon, who at that time had been occupying all of Europe, even including Spain and parts of Portugal, I believe. The revolution in Haiti dealt a serious blow to the colonial forces of Napoleon of France, forcing France to thereby therefrom sell that's practically one third of the United of what is now the United States that it then controlled, which was the state of Louisiana. The subsequently, when the Haitians, the revolutionary Haitians, sent boatloads of freed slaves, rebellions to Latin America, it was alongside the liberators of Latin America, led by Simon Bolivar, that the freed Haitian slaves, the revolutionaries, fought and helped liberate Latin America after 1804, leading up to the wave of independence, national liberation and independence movements that succeeded in liberating first Colombia and Venezuela, and then Ecuador and Bolivia, and I'm missing one. There's five there. Those countries became independent in part with the help of the freed Haitian slaves. Haiti's history in the Western Hemisphere is so tremendously important, and it's precisely why the colonialists and imperialists have ever since tried to repress and deny this existence. The fact that this black republic, this nation of freed Africans, have dealt such a severe blow to colonialism, over a century before many other countries would begin to liberate themselves from colonialism, is precisely why Haiti has ever since and therefrom been punished by imperialism. The United States itself did not recognize the independence of Haiti for almost 60 years, and France, former colonial master for its part, blackmailed, if I can use that word, blackmailed Haiti into paying an indemnity for its liberation. That is to say, Haiti was forced at the point of a gun barrel around the port of Port-au-Prince to pay an indemnity for all of the property that France lost in the slave revolution. And the property was the slaves themselves. And this debt that was imposed by the former colonial masters, this debt was paid for more than 100 years, extracting and sucking the wealth of Haiti. It was not until, I believe, the 1940s that that debt was canceled, and I believe that was only because the Americans had come in and they were setting up a new type of neo-colony. This is the appropriate historical context that we need to understand the natural calamities that have befallen Haiti. All throughout the 20th century, a similar type of historical revenge, let's call it, was also meted out to Haiti by American imperialism, which has been the top dog in the Western Hemisphere throughout the 20th century. Invading Haiti in 1915, remaining in occupation of Haiti until 1934, and ever since then supporting a string of dictatorships and illegitimate and unpopular governments leading up all the way to the present. To put the current situation in Haiti into its more recent context, we have to recall that there was a very vibrant and very large liberation movement that was rising in Haiti under the political party or mass party, I should say, of Lavalas. Lavalas is a Creole word for the flood that comes to clean it all away. And It was in 2004, February 29th, 2004, that the popular president, the very, very, you know, widely supported and democratically elected Jean-Bertrand Aristide, was kidnapped at gunpoint by the U.S. Marines and CIA thugs who invaded his home, kidnapped him and his wife, and shipped him off to the Central African Republic for what is an unknown sum of money paid by the George Bush administration. Canada, for its part, played a very prominent role in this kidnapping in the subsequent occupation and militarization of Haiti, the recolonization of Haiti that followed February 29th, 2004. Ever since then, the social infrastructure of the country has been demolished. For instance, one of the only medical school in Haiti at the time, which was housing Cuban doctors to train Haitian doctors, was shut down and replaced by a military base for the U.S. Marines. This is the kind of infrastructure that was destroyed by the occupation, and when the occupation was set up, it was these sorts of programs that the popular movement was implementing that were destroyed. The earthquake of January 12, 2010 was not the first major natural disaster that struck Haiti in the last few years. There was the large floods and hurricane of Gonaive in 2004, and there was the very devastating hurricanes that struck Haiti in 2008. And as we saw in 2008, the natural disasters that have struck Haiti have been compounded by the massive social disaster that has been the occupation. Today on Radio Basics, earlier today we interviewed longtime investigative journalist Kevin Pina. He's an American journalist and filmmaker who has been working in Haiti ever since 1991, the first time Jean-Bertrand Aristide was overthrown by a military coup, and then he went into exile in the United States. Kevin Pina, for I guess 2 decades now, has been living on and off in Haiti and documenting the human rights abuses associated with these military governments and foreign interventions. We interviewed him earlier on Radio Basics, and Kevin Pina was the first guest we had on the show when Radio Basics launched itself in September 11, 2008. So without further ado, let's get to this interview, and later in the show, we're going to be interviewing a Toronto-based activist, B.C. Holmes, who recently got back from Haiti, and she was on a human rights mission observing the human rights abuses that are associated with the current U.N. occupation in the country. This is Kevin Pina with Radio Basics. This is Steve DeSilva reporting for Radio Basics on CHRY 105.5 FM, and the topic of our discussion tonight is the social disaster, the social catastrophe that is Haiti today, putting the natural disaster into the context of the disaster that is imperialism in Haiti. And we have a very special guest with us tonight. His name is Kevin Pina, currently based out of the U.S., but a long time based out of Haiti, an investigative journalist who has been doing many important exposés of the role of foreign countries such as the United States and Canada in Haiti. And the last time we had Kevin with us, in fact, was our very first radio program broadcast at Radio Basics on September 11th, 2008. Kevin Pina, thank you for being on the show with us tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So, like I said to our listeners, the last time we had you on our show was just after the hurricane struck the Caribbean in the August of 2008. And the context of that show, we were talking about the social disaster, the social catastrophe that was the intervention after 2004 in Haiti, and how that played into the natural disaster that struck. So I have a short piece I'm going to play for our listeners, and then we'll use that as a basis to take off for our discussion.
Very good.
This is Kevin Pina on September 11, 2008 with Radio Basics.
The Harper administration, which began with the Martin administration, they have a direct responsibility in having destroyed Haiti's institutions, mm-hmm. by backing a paramilitary coup, by backing a false opposition movement that overthrew the democratically elected government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide in February 2004. Mm-hmm. And Haiti's institutions were destroyed, and they have never recovered since. Mm-hmm. So they have, in that sense, they have a direct responsibility for those deaths on the ground. It is criminal. That given the experience of Hurricane Jeanne and Gonaive in 2004, that there were not plans to evacuate only 160,000 residents in Gonaí. The Cubans managed to evacuate more than 800,000 people in Havana within a matter of 6 hours, 7 hours.
Mm-hmm.
What is wrong with this picture? After foreign interference by the U.S. government, the Canadian government, and the French government, overthrowing and ousting Aristide in February 2004, with more than $4 billion in economic assistance going into Haiti, with the experience of Hurricane Jean in 2004, and these promises of rebuilding the disaster preparedness networks, why do the police only have one shovel? Where did that $4 billion go that Canada, through the Canadian International Development Agency, that the United States government, through the USAID, the United States Agency for International Development, as well as the European Union, largely from France, where did that aid money go? Because it certainly did not help the Haitian people when it came to these four back-to-back storms.
Well, there we are, Kevin. You on Radio Basics with us a year and a half ago, and here we are in 2010. What has changed in Haiti?
Very little, unfortunately, except that now we have another crisis and another tragedy. It's absolutely scandalous that after billions of dollars of aid that Haiti, and after the experience of those 2008 earthquakes, that the disaster preparedness network in Haiti was even less equipped to deal with this catastrophe that struck on January the 12th.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, now all of this is being compounded by the fact that President Obama has militarized the relief operations. We know that this resulted in the slowdown of relief aid from civilian organizations at critical moments in the beginning of this crisis, where thousands of people were buried under rubble, where Haitians themselves, in a very courageous way, with just their hands, were trying desperately to seek the voices of the victims under the rubble and to help them and to get them medical attention. Certainly the Obama administration is directly responsible for having slowed down civilian aid to this catastrophe on the ground in Haiti. We don't know how many people, countless people, died as a result of that decision to militarize these relief operations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I find it very telling, speaks volumes that Clinton, Bush, and Obama can agree on this issue, and that is the issue of their intervention in Haiti and the way it's playing out right now. What more detail can you tell us about what's happening on the ground right now?
Well, we know it's utter chaos. I'm receiving calls from relatives who are stuck in places throughout the capital, doing nothing but drinking their own urine because they cannot find water. There is no food. People are desperate in several corners of the capital. They're afraid to move because of the chaos, despite the fact that there are 12,000 U.S. troops on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
This thing is a mess. And as I said, Médecins Sans Frontières on Saturday, while Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was meeting with Preval for a photo opportunity in a tent inside of Port-au-Prince, they were turning back aid planes. They turned back Médecins Sans Frontières, which had an entire surgical field unit hospital. They turned back the French government plane, which had another field unit hospital the day before on Friday. Civilian aid, other aid, other than that being distributed by the United States military out of their security concerns, are not reaching the people of Haiti. It has created a national security bottleneck of aid,
mm-hmm.
Unable to reach the Haitian people.
How do you account for this? I know there's two major reasons being given right now in the press for why aid is not getting out there, why people are not being helped. There's this bottleneck, and then there's the so-called security situation, right? What do both of these obstacles have to do with the occupation of Haiti for the last 6 years by foreign forces?
Well, I mean, I think that this is the natural conclusion of it. 12,000 U.S. troops are now in Haiti. We know that the U.S. military controls the tarmac. The United Nations protested and said since their operation had already been on the ground that the U.S. troops should fall under their command chain, command and control chain, and the Pentagon just flatly said no. No, we're in charge. We're here. This is a purely U.S. operation. It is not an international effort. It's a militarized operation. What did it have to do with the past 6 years? Well, again, Where did all the money go? Where are the disaster relief preparedness plans that the United Nations and the international community claimed that they were spending money to put into place, not only after Hurricane Jean in 2004, but after those four hurricanes struck Haiti in 2008? We are not seeing the results of that money.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I've got to tell you that I was just in Haiti a month prior to this earthquake. I returned on January the 5th. I met with more than 71 individuals and organizations, from women's groups to unionists to marketplace vendors, and they all said consistently that they had lost their faith in the Preval government, mm-hmm. that the Preval government no longer represented them, and that they were being cut out and the aid was not reaching them. Instead, they said that the aid was being used by Preval as a political tool in order to continue attacking and dismantling the Lavalas movement. That has been the obsession, and where U.S. foreign aid and international foreign aid has actually been spent on the ground in Haiti, according to these people. At the same time, they said very clearly that they still demanded that Jean-Bertrand d'Aristide, the president who was ousted, the democratically elected president who was ousted February 29, 2004, be allowed to return. We're still hearing those cries in the streets of Port-au-Prince even today. It would be a tremendous symbol of unity if instead of giving the Haitian people George Bush, they revile, and who they consider responsible for having overthrown their constitutional government in 2004, they should have instead brought former President Jean-Bertrand d'Aristide on board, because he is a mobilizing force, he's a galvanizing force, who is still revered and respected by the majority of the poor in that country.
Yeah, I saw a headline today from Associated Press, appearing in one of the monopoly media-controlled newspapers here in Toronto, Metro, and the headline read something to the effect that Haitian leadership in absentia, Haiti in chaos, right? I found that highly ironic and extremely duplicitous. Why is there no Haitian leadership right now in Haiti?
Well, it's been decapitated. I mean, there's like 60% of the cabinet that's unaccounted for. The Minister of Justice is presumed dead. His closest counselor, Michel Gaillard, is confirmed dead. We know that over half the parliament is still missing. The parliament building collapsed as well.
Mm-hmm.
We confirmed that the president of the Haitian Senate, Kelly Bastien, was killed. And before that, it really wasn't an effective government, but with this crisis and the earthquake and the number of losses among the government itself, an ineffectual government has been rendered insignificant at this point.
So that's one level of leadership, right? The legislative leadership. Now, what about the leadership of the people, the community-based leadership? My understanding is that over the last 6 years, there was, prior to 2004, a very large mass movement, which Lavalas was steeped in and was heavily responsible for, and responsible too. What happened to the leadership of that movement over the last 6 years?
Well, I mean, they've been bought off. There's been attempts to buy them off. At the same time, Preval has really orchestrated a covert campaign of misinformation in order to get them fighting amongst one another. It was really a COINTELPRO type operation that Preval was mounting with U.S. international money on the ground in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we're seeing that those same movements are today mobilized. Excuse me.
Yes.
Oh, God. I got to take this.
No problem. We'll edit it.
Hello. Hello. Yes, this is he. Good. Oh, good. Is it possible you can call me back in 15 minutes, please? I'm in the middle of another interview. Thank you. Sorry, man. Let's start again.
I can edit it out, but it's funny that it's even in there. I mean, you're in high demand right now. Feel free to just carry off what you were saying.
At the same time, what we've seen is that those same grassroots organizations today have mobilized at their own initiative to help their own communities. They've organized their own rescue teams. They've organized their own small clinics and hospitals, despite the fact that the militarization of the relief effort has left them with very few supplies, with very little water, with very little food. They are organizing amongst themselves as we speak to react to this crisis.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that right now at the Aristide Foundation for Democracy, there are over 10,000 people in a makeshift hospital and at the former university medical school that Aristide had founded. There are Cuban doctors, there are Haitian doctors that are trying to treat more than 10,000 people, 10,000 victims from this crisis. And I'll say again that the Aristide Foundation for Democracy is less than 5 minutes from the airport at Port-au-Prince, but they cannot get relief supplies to those victims. It is scandalous.
Now, what exactly do you mean by the militarization of the aid? And how does the aid that countries like Canada and the United States have been contributing, how does it compare against the aid that the Venezuelan government or the Cuban government have been giving? Because I understand that there's some differences there.
Well, I mean, the thing that we're seeing clearly is what has always been the truth behind the United Nations occupation, which is the United Nations has merely served as a veneer for what really has been a Pentagon-run operation. This crisis has merely forced them to step forward and show that they are the ones who've truly been behind this, the power behind the situation in Haiti over the past 6 years. Now they have assumed full control. They have assumed publicly the role that they've been assuming behind the scenes. Militarization means that this has become a military operation. Mm-hmm. Civilian organizations that were going to be involved in rescue and recovery have been turned back. Only rescue and recovery units that have the authorization of the United States military and are accompanied by U.S. military personnel are allowed to operate. All of the food distribution and water distribution is being commandeered and controlled by the U.S. military. At the same time, the Haitian police are just going crazy in the streets. I mean, people are hungry. People are desperate. I told you, I have family who are literally drinking their own urine to survive today. We're trying desperately to get them water and get them supplies. But it's next to impossible. At the same time, the Haitian police are attacking people who are naturally desperate. Yes, they're looting. Yes, they're trying to find food. Yes, they're trying to find water. But as a direct result of the U.S. military slowing down the pipeline of relief operations, of themselves having 12,000 troops on the ground and not getting out there and doing what needs to be done for the population.
Mm-hmm. Now, what proportion of what the U.S. is doing right now with their 12,000 soldiers is just a way to win support by meeting out the aid themselves? Or how much of it, what proportion of it is actually a military operation to...
They're afraid. They're afraid. They know that they're facing a popular rebellion.
Uh-huh.
They know that the facade of the coup, February the 29th, 2004, is gone. They know that the government that they tried to present as their client at the end of their largesse of foreign aid is now in shambles. They are afraid, and that's why they have militarized Haiti. They know that people, especially after Jean-Bertrand Aristide held a press conference in Johannesburg and offered to come back and help, it was immediately following that the United States, the Obama administration, not only militarized the situation, but then offered George Bush, in partnership with Bill Clinton, to lead the relief effort. It was a disgusting display.
You know, they say about history, the first time is tragedy and the second time is farce, but what I've always found about that statement is that it's only a farce the second time if we remember the first time, and I'm not only reminded of the disaster that struck Gonaïve in 2004, but also the hurricane in 2008 in Haiti. But let's choose an example that everybody remembers, right? Which is New Orleans, right? How is what we saw in New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina similar to what we're seeing right now in Haiti?
Well, I think it's very similar in that, again, militarizing relief efforts, making security concerns a priority over relief efforts. It's exactly a similar situation, except in this case, it's a question of international security on the ground in Haiti. Now, what case they can make for that under international law is not clear, but it's quite clear that they have had no compunction at all in militarily seizing control of the operations from civilian operations.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you want to tell us about? I know this is extremely difficult on you, your family, all your friends and comrades right now in Haiti. Is there any other information that you want to provide to our listeners right now?
Well, just that we need to be careful who we give our aid money to. I am supporting an organization called the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund. You can find their contact information at HaitiAction.net. Again, that's the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund at HaitiAction.net. This is an organization that works directly with grassroots groups that are on their own initiative, providing relief efforts to their own communities. We need to support those community initiatives. We need to support authentic grassroots relief and recovery and not fall prey to the traditional non-governmental organization fundraising paths, but rather support actual people on the ground who are doing it for themselves, because it's quite obvious that at the end of the day, they are the only ones they have to rely upon, themselves.
Final question, Kevin. What do you see happening in the coming days and weeks and months? How is the Haitian people going to respond to this this calamity and the remilitarization once again of their society?
Well, I think what's going to be increasingly clear is that this is a U.S. military occupation of the island. Mm-hmm. As the immediate crisis begins to subside, we're going to watch very carefully what the United States, what the Obama administration does with these troops. Right now, they are in command and control of Haiti militarily. Mm-hmm. I think that that will become more increasingly clear as the days, weeks, and months go by. In the meantime, I don't think that the Haitian people are going to sit idly by and take it. They have been abused in this process. They have been neglected in this process. And they have every right to protest the way in which this operation has been handled by the Obama administration.
Yeah, I just have to ask one more question. You mentioned that there's chaos right now in the streets, right? What is the character of this chaos? Because that chaos is being used as a justification for the military intervention.
People are hungry, rightfully so. They're starving. People are dying of thirst. They're dehydrated. People are falling down in the streets from dehydration. They are desperate. And again, they are rendered desperate by the way in which this relief operation has been militarized and handled by the Obama administration. This did not have to happen this way. They could have allowed civilian operations to have continued from the moment this crisis struck. Remember, Haiti is only 90 minutes from Miami, Florida. It was clear early on that the tarmac at the Toussaint-Louverture International Airport was not damaged. There were civilian relief flights that were being organized to land every 2 hours. As soon as the Obama administration took control and militarized this, those civilian flights and relief efforts were turned back, and then there had to be time, they said, in order to organize for security considerations on the ground, and precious hours and days were lost as a result, while people unnecessarily died beneath the rubble from lack of attention and care.
So once again, blood on the hands of the Obama administration.
Absolutely.
Kevin Pina, again, thank you so much for being with us. I know that your time is incredibly precious right now. Is there any other websites you'd give us for our listeners to continue following your work and efforts?
Well, HaitiAction.net and HaitiInformationProject.net. I also have a YouTube channel called Long Memory Prod, PROD.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
My pleasure.
Good night. That was Kevin Pina. That was Kevin Pina, a longtime investigative journalist reporting from Haiti. This is Steve DeSilva reporting for Radio Basics at CHOY 105.5.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio.
CHRY.
Y'all turn to that station.
105.5 FM.
Greetings, Toronto. Radio Basics. We're back here on CHRY 105.5, and the topic of our discussion tonight has been Haiti. But the topic of our discussion has not been like the presentations being given by the monopoly media, by the corporate media. Elsewhere, we've been discussing the natural disaster in the context of the social disaster that is imperialism, occupation, the militarization of Haiti, which is unfolding and escalating as we speak by the U.S. Marines, by the United States Army, and by the Canadian Armed Forces. In a few minutes, we're going to be bringing on a Toronto resident and activist here with the Toronto Haiti Action Committee, who just got back from Haiti doing a human rights observation, investigating the conditions under which Haitians were living under the UN occupation just prior to the earthquake. Before that, we have a track for you. The track is from the Venezuelan folk singer Ali Primera. The track is called La Noche del Jabalí, and You will feel the sorrow in this song, the sorrow that people are feeling right now for the Haitians in the midst of this great calamity. That sorrow is compounded 100-fold when you know and understand the revolutionary history, the great history that is the history of Haiti. The Haitian people have been struggling for 200 years to throw off the yoke of foreign oppression and occupation, and they provided humanity with the first and the everlasting example of slaves rising up and creating their own country in 1804. And that memory and that
that history will never be forgotten. This is Ali Primera, who was himself a revolutionary folk singer of Venezuela, singing about Haiti, La Noche del Jabalí.
Radio compañera, hay tantas cosas para conversar. No preguntes cuántas veces por segundo mueve las alas el colibrí. Pregunta, por ejemplo, ¿qué estamos haciendo por Haití? ¿Que dónde queda Isis? Es un lugar cercado por la noche, en el inmenso cobalto del Caribe. La noche en este caso es la miseria, es el hambre, es la palabra presa, es negar el camino a la inteligencia, es negar que el obrero es un poeta, es negar que el obrero es un poeta. ¿Qué cuántos habitantes tiene? Los que le quedan después de tanta masacre, que si luchan, además de sobrevivir, que si luchan. Claro que sí, pequeño amor, claro que sí. Los patriotas haitianos andan con luces y colores en las manos. Florecidos como la tierra regada por lloviznas y por tantos, pero han luchado solos, compañera, solos, aunque andan florecidos como andan los hombres cuando andan luchando, han luchado solos, compañeros. Hasta que nuestra conciencia dispare en la lucha por liberar Haití, hasta que el mundo se alce en una sola voz, luminosa, solidaria, y entre todos hagamos posible la mañana que acabe para siempre con la noche del jabalí. Con la noche del jabalí. Ahora pongámonos en marcha. Palabras y los pasos es una palabra muerta, y el tiempo nos dice: avanza, alma profunda en llama, avanza. Construyamos entre todos la mañana que acabe para siempre con la noche del jabalí.
That was Ali Primera, Venezuelan revolutionary folk singer. Even if you can't understand Spanish, you could very well understand the great sorrow being expressed in that song for the people of Haiti. And that song, I believe, is from the 1970s. So the great pain of Haiti being felt all throughout time, all throughout the last hundreds of years, as you know, especially there expressed by the Latin American, given the important role that Haiti played in liberating Latin America. Now, moving on with the show, we are interviewing tonight B.C. Holmes from the Toronto Haiti Action Committee. She just got back from Haiti just a few days before the earthquake struck on a human rights observation mission. B.C., thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So my understanding is that you got back from Haiti back to Canada on January 7th. What were you doing in Haiti?
We were taking part in a human rights delegation. We were visiting with victims of violence, with grassroots activists, you know, leaders in, say, the Lavalas movement and other political movements, as well as, you know, visiting, you know, reforestation projects and visiting the prison as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the visit to the prison is actually an interestingly symbolic scenario to discuss here. You were mentioning on your show earlier Solan Auguste, whose song Resistance you were playing on the air.
That's right.
Solan, as you mentioned, was arrested in 2004 and spent almost 2 years in jail without even being charged. When we went to visit the prison, we went specifically to visit another political prisoner named Ronald Dauphin. Now, Ronald Dauphin is in many ways like Solan Auguste. He was a Lavalas activist, a political individual. He worked with Aristide and the Aristide government when Aristide was still in power. He was arrested the day after Aristide left.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he's still in jail, or was still in jail, on January the 7th, without being tried. He's been largely in legal limbo for almost 6 years now. We went to visit him. The Toronto Haiti Action Committee and the Canada Haiti Action Network had tried to organize a letter-writing campaign to the Canadian government. A similar thing happened in the States, in an effort just to get his legal case moving. So we were going to go speak to him directly to find out, you know, what's happening. Is Canada really helping in situations like this, or is it really getting in the way?
You know, that I think that's really the legal system essentially collapsed after the occupation, after the invasion in 2004, did it not?
Indeed. And although, you know, Minister Kent, Peter Kent, who's the Minister of State of Foreign Affairs for the Americas, you know, he wrote us back and said, you know, hey, we're working with the Haitian government to try to reform the legal system. But when, for example, Michelle Jean went down there, she announced that Canada was going to help them, you know, build a larger prison in the neighborhood of Quatabouquet.
Some reform.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the sort of misdirected aid that I think that's going into to Haiti. The story of Ronald Dauphin is probably not complete if I don't mention the fact that the very prison that we visited him in was one of the buildings that collapsed. We don't know what Ronald Dauphin's current status is. The New York Times was reporting that some of the convicts there had escaped, but like I say, we don't know where Ronald Dauphin is today.
Yes, yeah, so they sent that I saw this the coverage around the prisons presented in the mainstream media. It was to the extent that now we have a security situation because all these people have escaped this prison.
And
but, you know,
I find that really questionable, especially knowing, you know, the Haitian character. Surprisingly, Haitians, not surprisingly, but contrary to what foreigners might think, Haitians have a very strong sense of right and wrong, a very strong sense of following the rules. And although, you know, there are prisoners like there are in any community, when we visited a prison 2 years ago in 2007, we saw situations where, you know, prisoners who hadn't yet been locked up, you know, were just sort of like told, oh, you have to stand over there while we deal with this sort of thing. And they were very, you know, accommodating. They were very straightforward. They stood over there. They were in line. They didn't try to do anything wrong or escape, even though they weren't being guarded. Their guards didn't have guns. You know, they weren't being locked up, et cetera.
Yes. I mean, as you point out, many of these prisoners, and I've been following the situation for a few years, these aren't convicted criminals, necessarily. In most cases, these are unconvicted people who have been in this legal limbo since the infrastructure, and with that, the legal infrastructure of the country collapsed after the occupation.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you listen to, say, what Minister Kent says about we're working closely with the government to reform the legal system, so first up, I think that's a sort of vague, hand-wavy sort of answer. But I think it also is symbolic of the sort of aid that Canada has been spending there. So we've been spending an inordinate amount of our aid on political reform, on running elections, on funding police and soldiers, and sometimes just directly funding the opposition parties in Haiti. And yet, you know, if you ask the average Canadian, you know, what do you think of when you hear the phrase aid? Usually people think about, you know, hospitals, education, you know, food programs, yeah, et cetera. That's not the kind of aid that Canada is generally giving. I mean, they do to some extent, but it's usually, you know, they trickle some money down to some non-governmental organizations that are largely unable to really take on the whole gravity of the situation. I find it very interesting, for example, so Kevin was talking about Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders. Médecins Sans Frontières declined to take aid money from the Canadian government. There's an organization called the Canadian International Development Agency, or CIDA, and they're the organization that dispenses aid for various countries. Médecins Sans Frontières just said, you know, we're going to go and we're going to operate in Haiti, but we're not going to take CIDA funding because we can clearly see that it's linked to partisan objectives, that, you know, if we take it, we are binding ourselves to Canada's objectives or binding ourselves to not criticize the government when the government is doing wrong there, et cetera.
Well, it's good to know that they took that position.
Exactly.
As a member of the Toronto Haiti Action Committee, I know you guys have done a tremendous amount in the last 5 years to inform and educate Canadians about what Canada's role has been. Canadians are now being reintroduced to Haiti in the wake of this earthquake, and the same series or same style of discourses that were used to justify the intervention of Haiti in the first place in 2004 is being used again, but in a different context. Of course, we have an earthquake now. How are you, just to summarize, how would you characterize the nature of Canada's intervention, if you can put it in as bluntly and shortly as possible? What has been the character of that intervention and presence over the last 5-6 years?
So I think our involvement there has been largely about trying to create a governmental force that can keep the people in check and to keep the parties that we like in power. I think it's been pretty clear that Canada's efforts to train the police, which is the number one thing that people have been discussing, you know, the government has been discussing when it talks about Haiti for the last 6 years, that's been a failure, unless you imagine that the real objective has been to create a brutal police force that is, you know, taking out, taking violent action against the Haitian people. There's almost no other way to look at it. If you look at the sort of violence that's been directed towards City Soleil, this was an area that we looked at in our delegation. We spoke to many members, many people who lived in the poor neighborhoods like City Soleil and like Bel Air, who'd been the victim of violence, either from the Haitian National Police, who we helped to train.
RCMP trained, yeah.
Exactly, RCMP trained. Or MINISTA, which is the United Nations so-called stabilization mission that's operating in Haiti. Basically a group of 9,000 United Nations soldiers, many of them from countries like Brazil and Jordan, most of whom don't speak any Creole.
Also, I mean, just to, I think it's in contemporary international relations, it's important to mention also Nepal and Sri Lanka, two armies that are brutal for counterinsurgency.
Exactly. And, I mean, one of the cases that's very interesting, we were talking to people in Jacmel, and they had been given a whole bunch of supplies from Sri Lankan troops who were returning home, and we were saying, well, you know why they returned home, don't they? And they were like, no, we don't really know why. I said, well, they were returning home because 108 of them were charged with engaging in sexual abuse involving minors. Like, this was a massive scandal involving MINISTA going on there. And I, you know, it was shocking to us that, you know, people who interacted with these forces had no idea that they were leaving the island in disgrace for having, you know, having been engaged in such gross crimes.
BC, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time for the night. Can you give us some information so other Torontonians can either get involved with or learn more about your organization?
Certainly. So we're the Toronto Haiti Action Committee. We have a website at fac.ca. That's thac.ca. And we keep information updated on the website. We're also going to do a report back about our delegation on January the 28th.
Okay. We'll be sure to put that on our website.
Thank you, Pat.
We'll keep in touch. Thank you so much. That was B.C. Holmes of the Toronto Haiti Action Committee speaking to us regarding the situation in Haiti. She was there just before the earthquake struck, and she was talking to us about the humanitarian, the human rights situation of Haitians under the occupation of the United Nations, and prior to that, the occupation of Canada, United States, and France. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. If you're wondering why you're getting this information from CHRY and Radio Basics, this information that is being denied, suppressed, or not reported on in other information sources, namely the mainstream media, the corporate media, the monopoly media, it's because we are People's Radio. Here at Radio Basics, we work very closely with, and we are the radio wing of Basics Free Community Newsletter. And if you want to learn more about us and want to get involved, you can check us out at basicsnews.ca. Earlier in the show, Kevin Pina, who we are interviewing, listed some organizations that you can donate to. You can visit his website that he's affiliated with at HaitiAction.net to actually get aid to organizations that are of the people of Haiti, not to these organizations that are connected with the occupiers. I'm going to have to leave it there for the night. Let's go out with a track from a Toronto artist. This is Muhammad Ali featuring Sarah Marlowe, and it's called Kill the Bandits, and I'm sure the theme will be very familiar to you after the discussion we've had tonight. Radio Basics for CHRY 105.5, we out.
It is not enough to have expelled from your country the barbarians who have bloodied it for two centuries. It is not enough to have put a break to these ever-reviving factions which take turns to play act this liberty, like ghosts that France had exposed before your eyes. It is necessary, by a last act of national authority, assure forever an empire of liberty in this country, our birthplace. We must take away from this inhumane government, which held for so long our spirits in the most humiliating torpor, all hope to resubjugate us. We must at last live independent or die. Independence or death. May these sacred words bring us together, and may they be the signal of our struggles and of our gathering.
At last live independent, the sacred words of struggle. Don't turn away the French, turn the empire to rubble. The words of Dessalines, the man destined to begin. The fight for freedom, not less until we win. The lesson lies within, names on the graves of slaves. On the Isle of Haiti where the ocean waves gave. Lessons time-tested like sundial shadow makers. Don't trust in no mule or 40 shallow acres. The powers that oppress me proclaim emancipation. But in that process, like man still, he ran the Haitians. Slam down the ground like sowing seeds of cotton. But the fruits of this labor smells of something rotten. This land of freed slaves sure came bittersweet. Just like Alabama, straight would hang by its feet. No retreat from defeat, Haitians resist till fruition. Memory of Dessalines and his one true vision. Noble office, owners of plantations in the name of noble profits, replaced by CEOs, sweatshops replace slavery, still exploit for exports, why they embrace Haiti, sending United Nations another white man's burden, but Haitians resisted like plantation crops burning, battle for Algiers became battle for ideas, from the flames of resistance burn when their eyes glare, the first slave revolt, the last UN occupation, while Aristide asked, you a slave or are you Haitian, if the case is the latter, rise to occasion like a ladder, and with a black fist make the blue helmets shatter, cause UN soldiers patrol, or should say occupy, responsibility to protect such a lie, respond to progress, that imperial project, we give bombs and protest, Molotov cocktail artist, history repeats itself like a Bush in Oval Office, sent in the UN troops in the name of noble prophets, respond to progress, the imperial project, we give bombs and protest, Molotov cocktail artist. I say a piece of the pie, carve a slice, make a toast, then move to suck it dry. Take God's good green earth, turn it to barren sand. Call me bleeding heart, but no blood on my hands. Our arms do not kill.